Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I'm Anthony Ray Bench. How's it going, everybody? It's just me today, but since Chris Gord demands to be on the show no matter what, I'm being forced to shoehorn in clips of his panels from last year's Dragon Con. For those of you that don't know, Dragon Con is basically the Mardi Gras of nerd conventions. So I've heard. I've never actually been. Chris never invites me, and I can't afford to buy a badge myself. I would love to go, maybe next year. Who knows, you guys could start a hashtag or do an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter or something. I'm just kidding. Please don't do that. Honestly, don't do that. So anyways, Chris is too busy to record this week because he's preparing for this year's Dragon Con, and he asked me several times to read you his schedule. He has like a billion panels this year, so please bear with me. Dragon Con is in Atlanta, Georgia, September 1st through the 4th, and you can follow them on Twitter at Dragon Con. That's C-O-N, not K-H-A-N, like in Star Trek. You can also go to dragoncon.org. I'm sure they have schedules and lists of events and stuff like that. Another option, as always, is to follow Chris on Twitter, at ThatChrisGore. And I'm sure he'll be posting stuff from Film Threat's Twitter account too, which is at Film Threat. On Friday, September 1st, Chris will be on the Collector's Quandary Problem Solving for Serious Collectors panel. I'm guessing that's about serious collectors solving serious problems. The panel takes place at 1 p.m., and the location of that panel is the International North Hyatt. Next up, Chris will be on the Star Wars Dysfunctional Skywalker Family panel, and that takes place at 5:30 p.m., and the location of that is the International North Hyatt. Also on Friday is the Film Threat Podcast Live with Chris Gore, and not Anthony Ray Bench. That'll be at 8:30 p.m., and the location of that is the Centennial One Hyatt. For Saturday, September 2nd, Chris will be on the Broadcasting in New Media panel. And that's going to be at 4 p.m., Galleria 6 at the Hilton. On Sunday, September 3rd, Chris will be on the State of Geek Cinema panel, 8:30 p.m. The location of that panel will be at the Learning Center Hyatt. For Monday, September 4th, Chris will be on From Fan to Creator at 11:30 a.m. The location of that panel will be at the International North Hyatt. So there's that for all of you enjoying Dragon Con next week. I'm not going to be there. Just thought I'd remind you. Anyway, Chris wanted me to play some clips that weren't good enough to be an episode just by themselves. So here we go.
Welcome, Dragon Conners. How you doing? I'm Chris Gore. I'm your host for this panel, Spoilers, the Gory Details. This is the panel where we will discuss everything and all things spoilers. I'm going to spoil something for you right now. So this is a zone where you may hear lots and lots of spoilers.
Oh!
You're the perfect person to hear this. Here's a spoiler for you. If you've seen the movie Batman v Superman, I think we all know that Superman dies.
What?
But I'm gonna spoil it for you. In Justice League, Superman comes back. Spoiler, I just ruined it. Let me introduce our esteemed panel here. These are film junkies, comedian, people that I talk to about film all the time, and I want to bring them to the stage. First of all, where is Patty Hawkins? Patty Hawkins, film writer, host of the Dick on Film podcast, coming very soon. Join the panel, Patty.
Thank you.
My friend Shane Mackey, local comedian here from Atlanta, come on to the stage. And my good friend, Lawrence Green, member of the 501st, big hand for our returning champions. So guys, we're all film fans, and we're all film freaks. I want to know, first of all, I'm going to ask the audience, where do you guys stand on spoilers? Do you read spoilers? Yay? Let's hear it. Yay? Or do you avoid spoilers?
Depends on the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, depends on the movie. All right. I want to find out where our panel stands, and so I want to ask you guys that question. But for me, I love spoilers. There are certain movies I stay away from. I think part of the problem now with trailers is they show too much. I think my feeling is I'm a big DC guy, so when I went to see Batman v Superman, my gut feeling upon walking into the movie was I wanted to get this fucking over with. Because I had seen a bajillion commercials, and I think the commercials, the trailers for that really did the movie a disservice. Because I think had we seen less of the movie, we might have actually enjoyed it more. But I'll read spoilers for some stuff. I watch some foreign trailers sometimes because they have 3 seconds of extra footage. I try to avoid big spoilers for Star Wars. I think it's a franchise that I prefer to be spoiler free. And I think we do have to give Disney credit that they did a really good job of not ruining any of the big surprises in the movie. I think, you know, when I heard...
I knew Harrison Ford had a one-picture contract.
Yeah, well, we all knew that. But what I'm saying is when Kylo Ren, when you learn that, you know, your father, Han Solo, I did not know that going into the movie, and that was a shocker.
What?
So let's start with Lawrence here, and I want to bring you in on this. Lawrence, you have very specific spoiler guidelines,
right.
So I want to hear where you stand.
Okay, so if it's not Star Wars or the Dark Knight trilogy, I don't really care about spoilers. I go back and forth on the Avengers. I do like the adventure. So for Civil War, I went in totally spoiler-free. Star Wars, I try to avoid spoilers, but somebody keeps telling me to watch the trailers.
Sorry.
So I only go with that, but I agree. They've cut it in such a way that I don't think you're getting so much. So I don't want to see any images, but I go with Chris on that one. But the two movies where I went literally no information... The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. I would literally in the theater close my eyes, plug my ears, hunch down the whole thing, and it paid off. There was not one scene in that movie where I didn't feel completely blown away. So that's my methodology.
Now, I have to compliment you on that because Lawrence will go to the movies, a trailer for a film that he doesn't want to know anything will come up, and he will just go like this, and then not. And I'm curious, just quick follow-up question for you is, how does that impact the experience of the film when you've sequestered yourself from information from that movie? Is it better?
For me, it is. I mean, literally the image, that's that first impression. You can only see something the first time, one time. So I go for maximum impact. I don't want to see it in a trailer because then I'll be, oh, what happened next? But if I see it in continuity, then I get that maximum impact. And I kind of think that's what the filmmaker wants, and I agree with what Chris said in his introduction. Some of the trailers now, they give away so much. I mean, we've been saying that for years, but now with pop culture being such a driven thing, they really tend to, oh, and then this happened. Oh, well, then there's no point for me to go ahead and see it.
I think when they spoil so much in the trailers, it sort of like comes off as being desperate.
Yep.
It comes off as just being completely desperate on the part of the studios, and I think the DC's kind of had that problem. I don't know how you guys felt about Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad. I think we can't say that any of those films are perfect films, but I think that the marketing did not do them justice. And I think here's the problem is, the marketing is so good, the movies do not live up to the marketing these days. That's what's kind of a shocking and disappointing thing. Shane, where do you stand on spoilers?
Well, I know the movie's not over till I see the big explosion. That's the thing. And then there are some movies that the end of the movie is on the poster, like Quarantine, the American Rec version. Like, the last shot of that movie is the poster. So I'm like, I know what I'm getting. But I think with Suicide Squad, a lot of scenes that they were shot, especially with Jared Leto, weren't in the movie. So people going in expecting those aren't in there. But then there's the guy in England who was going to sue the studio.
Right.
Because those scenes weren't in there, so it's you can't win either way.
He might have a good case. I mean, it sounds like frivolous, but it's like you're advertising something and then not getting the thing that you advertised. But I will say, in Suicide Squad's defense, the best Ghostbusters movie I saw this summer was Suicide Squad. I thought it was fantastic. It's pretty much Ghostbusters, right? They're going to a place, there's a big demonic spiritual thing, it's magic, demon, whatever. Patty, where do you stand on spoilers?
Well, a little bit on. Is this thing on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this on?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Brilliant.
Try the other one.
This.
No.
Here, how about share mic?
Okay. First, talking about Suicide Squad real quick. That guy in England who wants to sue Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
I actually stand beside him.
Yeah.
Usually I don't go into the coops like that, but I think he made a very good point. He said there are tons of scenes in the trailer for Suicide Squad involving the Joker that never made it to the cut that I paid money to see. And I think he's got a legitimate beef to take that up with. I'm not expecting him, to get punitive damages and malarkey or whatever.
Give him his £10 back.
Yeah. Well, get to close with the matter is you send a message to the studios that they've always been on the cusp of, marketing a movie to make it much better than it really is. That's what marketing's job is. But don't put the baits that I can't eat after the trap is closed.
Right. I like that. I really wish that that's applause worthy. I think that's an applause break for that. But I think the problem with this is I think that certain movies, I don't think they realize they don't need to spend that much money on the marketing. They really don't. Star Wars, they could have just said Star Wars opens in December, and that would be it. I would love to see the marketing for Episode 8 to just be the big Roman numeral 8, 30-second trailer, here's when it opens, and that's it. Show virtually no scenes from the film. I don't know why that they haven't thought about that as just sort of some mystery. You can run the trailers that show scenes after the movie opens, but all of us are going to see Star Wars Episode 8 the day it opens, if not the weekend it opens. We're all going there, right? So I think that the marketing is the thing that spoils itself. The spoilers are so prevalent in it. What I did like about Christopher Nolan, because I know something about his process, he was kind of an asshole to the people in the marketing department at Warner Brothers, where he would only give them, and I'll tell you this, I know for a fact on Dark Knight, he only allowed them to use footage from the first half of the movie. Because I remember when I saw a screening of it, an early screening, I hadn't seen, we got to the midpoint of the movie and I said, okay, I don't even know what's going to happen now, right? I have no clue what's going to happen because I haven't seen any of this stuff. I've seen everything I've seen from the trailers, which I watched a million times, I've already seen by the first half of the film. So the second half of the film was going in blind. It took some crazy turns, The Dark Knight, which I think is nearly a perfect movie. But let's talk about the different film franchises and our speculation on the future, which I hope you guys don't mind. We're speculating spoilers for Episode 8 and 9 and the direction of the Star Wars franchise, right? Rey, Kylo Ren. What I loved about the way that The Force Awakens ended, it was a kind of satisfying moment. My understanding is that that Luke had a line that was in the original script. Luke did have one line, and I guess the Writers Guild or something accidentally put it out there, but it's gone, it's wiped away. They end up not using it, obviously. It's that sort of pensive look with a broken man on an island receiving this lightsaber. Here's the call to action. And I think the one thing that we do know, has anyone here been reading up on what's going to happen in Episode 8? Anyone? No? Okay, well, now we're purely speculating here, but we know we go back to that island. So we know that we're going to see a conversation occur between Rey and Luke. I don't know what it is with Jedi, but when the going gets tough, they seem to run away to islands or desert planets. I don't know what the point of that is, but I want to hear your guys' speculation. Whoever wants to jump in first,
give a crap about Jedi's. How did C-3PO get his red arm?
Yeah, well, that's actually explained in the comics, right?
Yeah,
it was
a tribute to
another droid, but where did we leave it, right? Kylo Ren is going off to be trained, to complete his training, right? Whatever that is. Rey has advanced in the Force way too quickly, and I'm not sure if you've heard the theories about Rey. The theory about Rey is that Rey is the villain of this trilogy because she basically advanced in the ways of the Force too quickly. Remember Yoda was saying, the dark side is quicker, it's easier, and she got those powers way too fast.
So she's another Anakin?
She could be another Anakin. We don't know. So, and the interesting thing is you've got sort of the reverse conflict where, like, Luke was struggling with turning to the dark side, and Kylo Ren is struggling with being called to the good. Because there's a great book I highly recommend you guys all read called The Secret History of Star Wars. I like to read audiobooks just because I spend too much time in front of a computer anyways. So I highly recommend the audio version of the book because the guy who reads the book does
like
every...
like to read audio.
Well, no, he does, exactly. He does every voice. He does Irvin Kershner. He does George Lucas, Harrison Ford. He does Mark Hamill. It's a brilliant book. And the interesting thing was when George Lucas was writing the original treatment for Empire Strikes Back, he thought to himself, no one is going to believe that Luke is going to die in a lightsaber fight with Darth Vader, because you're not going to kill off the main character of the story. So there's no tension. So if Darth Vader and Luke fought, we know as the audience that they're not going to kill Luke because Luke is the good guy and he's going to live. But Luke might turn to the dark side. So he said if he made that the main conflict of the fight, that Luke might turn to the dark side, that there'd actually be tension in that fight. So, okay, I've been talking a bit too much.
Wasn't that wonderful? Anyway, here at Film Threat, we occasionally get fan mail. I figured I'd read a few before I played some more of Chris's Dragon Con clips. This is from Ick Luga. I think that's German or something. Anyways, Ick Luga says, "Dear Film Threat, your podcast is great, but I wish Anthony Ray Bench was on it more." Thank you, Ick Luga. I appreciate your kind words. This one's from Soy Un Mentioso. I'm probably messing that one up. Anyways, Soy says, "Love the show. Keep up the great work. Fire Chris Gore out of a cannon into the sun. Viva Lie Anthony." Thank you for your continued support, Soy. I'll pass that along to Chris. That's all for now. We have a live DVD Doomsday panel Chris did last year, but before I play that, Chris wanted me to remind you once again about all the panels he's doing this year at Dragon Con. Honestly, I'm too lazy to read all that again, so I'm just going to use my engineering powers to cut and paste the schedule for you right here. On Friday, September 1st, Chris will be on the Collector's Quandary Problem Solving for Serious Collectors panel. I'm guessing that's about serious collectors solving serious problems. The panel takes place at 1 p.m., and the location of that panel is at the International North Hyatt. Next up, Chris will be on the Star Wars Dysfunctional Skywalker Family panel, and that takes place at 5:30 p.m., and the location of that is the International North Hyatt. Also on Friday is the Film Threat Podcast Live with Chris Gore and not Anthony Ray Bench. That'll be at 8:30 p.m. and the location of that is the Centennial One Hyatt. For Saturday, September 2nd, Chris will be on the Broadcasting in New Media panel. And that's going to be at 4 p.m. Galleria 6 at the Hilton. On Sunday, September 3rd, Chris will be on the State of Geek Cinema panel, 8:30 p.m. The location of that panel will be at the Learning Center Hyatt. For Monday, September 4th, Chris will be on From Fan to Creator at 11:30 a.m. The location of that panel will be at the International North Hyatt. Got all that? Okay. Here's DVD Doomsday live from Dragon Con 2016.
Since you're here, I don't want you just sitting here bored. I want you to enjoy what you're about to see, which is DVD Doomsday Live here at Dragon Con. Now, I hate to break it to you, but DVDs are alive and well. And
yes.
Here's why. I'm a guy that, like, I do love my digital copies of my movies. I love my digital copies of my movies. But I can tell you that when my internet is broken, or when your internet is broken, I am turning on my DVD player, and I am watching a DVD, and you aren't watching shit. Because you decided that streaming, it's all about streaming, only if your internet's working. And when your internet's not working, I'm watching a DVD, and you're watching a Black Mirror.
Amen.
Black Mirror, a great show on Netflix. Exactly. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you. This is Tyler. I met he and his lovely wife and friends the other night. I was dressed as Bruce Banner because we all cosplay when we're here at DragonCon. And there is a horrifying picture you can't unsee on my Twitter feed at that Chris Gore. I want to thank all you guys for thank you for that time.
Yeah.
I want to thank all you guys for showing up. We're going to have a fun time. We're going to talk a lot about movies. I do want to answer all of your questions. This is going to be part informational, and it's going to be part answering your questions. And everyone who asks a question, I mean about 15 of you who ask questions, will all get a DVD. I'm not going to tell you that it'll be a good DVD. You might get Nightmare on Elmo Street.
That's a good one.
This is not a good one. Most of you are getting Nightmare on Elmo Street. Are you all over 18 years old?
No.
Yes.
Yes. Mentally or physically?
Yes. Well, mentally, I don't expect that.
Are you?
As long as you're all over 18 years old, I can give you this DVD because it seems like there's a healthy portion of nudity in this movie. I am sorry to say. So please begin to come up with your questions.
But how are the special features, though? That's what it's
There are a ton of special features on this. Let me tell you about this movie. This movie is directed by... This is sort of a bonus feature because you showed up early. This movie is directed by one of the shittiest filmmakers in the United States. This is directed by a guy named Bill Zebub. Okay, remember this name. Bill Zebub. His last name is Z-E-B-U-B. Okay. He makes horrible movies. Some of his movies... He made a movie called Dick Shark. He also made a movie... I am not making this up. He made a movie called Jesus Christ Serial Rapist. Thank you for the ooh. So he also made a movie called Dick Hill Ant Farm. Makes no sense. And it has like a picture, it looks like it's somebody's dick and there are ants coming out of it. That was my reaction exactly. So this guy makes terrible movies, but he's incredibly prolific. And one of the funniest things on this disc, I can tell you, are the trailers for his other movies. So if you happen to get a copy of Nightmare on Elmo Street, which is very likely if you ask a question for this panel, you'll be able to check it out. And there are lots of special features on this disc. This is also, by the way, the uncut version with an hour of extras. Lucky you.
How long is the extra hour? How long's the movie with that?
I have no idea. It says running time 2 hours. 2 hours of shit, I'm gonna guess. All right, but let's get this party started. I did DVD Tuesday on G4 TV for 8 years. I'll tell you a dumb quick story about how I did that job. I had no aspirations to ever be on television. I did not care about being on TV. It just wasn't. I was a writer who wrote about film, and I had done a couple TV things. I did a show called The X Show, which was kind of like The Man Show, and it was on FX, and I had a segment called The Gory Details. Every week I talked about movies. I did that for a couple years. Then I did a show called The New Movie Show. Then I did a show called Festival Pass, which was on Stars. It was me drunk at a film festival. And then I did a show for IFC called Ultimate Film Fanatic. I did 2 seasons of that, which was like Movie Geek Knowledge. And it was a lot of fun, but I really did not like... When I did the stuff for IFC, they wanted to hip me up and make me look cool. So they had me like dress in these sort of hip-looking outfits, and I'd have to do wardrobe tests, and it was weird. We had like canned jokes that they wrote for me, which I thought were stupid, and it was not a good experience, you know, even though that I loved all the geeks on the show because we were all of the same mind. So I really sort of given up on doing television. And this guy named Gavin Purcell worked for a TV show called, it was the National Enquirer TV show. And he asked me, hey, do you want to do National Enquirer TV? And I said, no, I don't like gossip. I don't read gossip rags. I don't want to do it. He said, please, he begged me, he came to my house, I was living in Pasadena at the time, and he did this interview with me, and he thought I was funny. My whole thing is that, look, I like to give information, but if I can deliver it to you in a way that might be somewhat funny, you might remember that piece of information. So he remembered me, and years later, he said, because I watched Tech TV. I watched Screensavers, and I watched X-Play. I was a fan of Morgan Webb and Adam Sessler, Sarah Lane, Kevin Pereira. Before I was even on that show, I watched that network. And Gavin Purcell, out of the blue, calls me, and he says, look, we have this segment called DV Tuesday. We tried some different people out. I want you to come in and talk about being on it. It was one of those things where I never really auditioned to do things. People just said, well, he's the movie guy. Bring him in and hire that guy. So I came in, I did this interview, and Gavin was like, look, you have the job. All it is reviewing DVDs. How can we make this work? I said, I have three demands. I said, one, I want to be able to say whatever I want within reason. Okay? Obviously, I can't swear, but I want to be able to have my opinion. So my opinion is my own. Number two, I want to be able to wear whatever I want. Because I did not like the experience of being hipped up, right? I want to wear t-shirts. I really just wanted to be myself on camera. And the third demand was, I want to be able to keep all the DVDs that I review. He said, I can agree to the first two. The last one, I cannot agree to. So I didn't get to keep the DVDs. So when I said bye on Attack of the Show, I actually went out and bought all those DVDs. So, and I found out years later that the producers basically, their whole excuse for keeping the DVDs was they needed a library to access those titles in case they needed them. But really what was happening is all the producers were stealing the DVDs. I found that out years later. But interesting enough, Jimmy Fallon became a big fan of Attack of the Show. He liked Attack of the Show, and he'd been on the show a couple times, and liked it so much that the original executive producer of Attack of the Show, Gavin Purcell, got hired by Jimmy Fallon to do the Jimmy Fallon Show. So he left Attack of the Show to go work, and he currently is the producer of Jimmy Fallon Show on NBC. So, weird story, because a lot of people ask, how did you get started at G4? Now you don't have to ask that question. So if you're going to ask that question, it's been answered. Thank you very much for paying attention. But we're going to have a lot of fun talking about DVD stuff. I want to invite up to the stage my panel of fellow movie geeks and friends. First coming to the stage, Shane Mackey. Shane Mackey's a comedian, trivia guy. He's a local Atlanta-based comedy artist, improv dude. He does the fanfic theater with me every year. If you've not seen the fanfic theater, who saw the fanfic theater the other night? Horrifying. Horrifying.
What's up, everybody?
Some of the things that were said at the fanfic theater, I take no responsibility for. There was a lot of shipping. There was a lot of gay sex, I'm just going to say. Batman had sex with RoboCop. It was a free-for-all. And I want to thank Shane for helping me host that. Also want to bring to the stage comedian, artist, writer, performer, Patty Hawkins, cosplaying today as Kolchak. Kolchak. Big round of applause for Patty. All right. Now, some of the questions we're going to be answering today. Some of the questions. What is the greatest DVD of all time? What is the greatest DVD of all time? I have an answer. You guys are going to have to think of what the answer to that question is. We will answer it at the end of this panel. What are some of the greatest special features on a DVD? Maybe a DVD worth picking up just for the special features. We're going to answer that right here on the stage. I'm prepping you guys so that you know what you're supposed to talk about.
Right.
What are some of the...
Because we should have done this before we did the show, instead we're doing it now.
What are some of the strangest special features on a DVD? Right?
All right.
Or the weirdest, wildest, craziest. We're going to get to that. I want you to ask questions. So those of you that are going to want to ask questions, please raise your hands. But I am going to kick off the panel by talking about what are some of the strangest special features on a DVD. I will be the first to answer this. One of the weirdest, and it's also one of my personal favorites, is for the movie, the DVD, Wet Hot American Summer. Does anyone have that disc or are familiar with that movie? So it has a special feature where you can watch the movie and you select this special feature, and the only difference is that it's Wet Hot American Summer, but with farts. So the whole thing is they basically just added fart noises to the soundtrack of the movie. So every time a character sits down, you hear a it's awful. It's the same movie, just with farts. It's one of the weirdest special features. Not a lot. I'd like to see The Force Awakens with farts. Why don't they do that? That would be pretty awesome.
Would be an improvement in my book.
So, do you guys have a special feature on a DVD? It could be a commentary, it could be something weird, it could be like on the Memento disc, there's a weird thing where you kind of have to do like a code to figure out. Like what? There's a lot of weird stuff. So, I'm throwing it out to you guys. I want to hear, what is your favorite strange special feature on a DVD that makes a DVD worth taking a second look at?
Just a weird extra, I think it's on Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And you put in a special code, and it cuts to Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes reenacting scenes with action figures. And it's not listed anywhere. It's like you just kind of hear about it second or third hand. And I don't remember what it's been years, but I don't remember what the code is. But I'm like, well, that's something that, like,
I like that. That's on the level of, like, I love Easter eggs.
And I miss when Easter eggs used to be Easter eggs, when word of mouth would carry it around as opposed to...
They kind of announce the Easter eggs now, right?
Yeah,
isn't that kind of what they do?
You know, 2 minutes on Twitter, 3 minutes on 4chan, and everybody knows about it already.
True. All right, Patty, do you have one? I want to hear what yours is. I got to look something up.
A recent one that comes to mind is that I thought was very strange, but kind of more delightful than I found the film to be, was Sin City 2. You can watch the entire movie in the raw green screen format.
Ooh, I like that.
It's just the actors and anything non-specific is like green furniture and everything else. So you get to see everybody in their makeup and color. The only problem is that they showed it like 4 times the speed. So if you do it at 4 times the speed, you're watching it at like 16 times speed. But it's in its entirety. And it just spins around, and you see the wires, you see the mattresses, you see that there was nobody in the background. And it tickled me. It really tickled me. It tickled me more than I thought the movie was. I thought it was a weak sister to its predecessor.
Cool. What's the area code for Atlanta? Is it 414?
404.
I have to send a text to someone. In the middle of a panel. Because there's a treat that we may have at the end of this panel that I want to share with you. Something that no one else has seen. So it's 404. We're trying to make this happen right now. Okay, right? We're going to make this happen. All right, cool. Let's start with questions. Because no one in this room yet owns Nightmare on Elm Street, the uncut version with 1 hour of special features. You, sir, have just, assuming that's a decent question, you have just earned yourself a copy of Nightmare on Elm Street.
A Nightmare on Elm Street. Oh, God. I have 6 copies of that movie. When you're friends with Chris Gore, that's what you get for birthdays, Christmases, Valentine's Days, Labor Days, etc. You also get a lot of Dick Shark DVDs. They make terrible stocking stuffers. Here's another clip of Chris from a panel on cult films where he talks about John Waters and Pink Flamingos.
Well, one thing, I know you said not to talk about definition, but I think the interesting thing about cult films is that you can't make a cult film. You can make an exploitation film, you can make a nunsploitation film, you can make a troll movie, but you cannot make a cult film because a cult film is a movie that stands the test of time, and it's a movie that an audience discovers and then builds a cult around it, whether it be The Room with Tommy Wiseau or something very near and dear to my heart, the films of John Waters. Or the films of Alejandro Jodorowsky. And I was going to say... If I could pick one of my all-time favorite cult films is Pink Flamingos by John Waters.
Yeah.
Most of you have probably seen it. Who hasn't seen it? Raise your hand. Who hasn't seen it? You need to see Pink Flamingos, and you need to then see every John Waters movie ever made. Female Trouble is another personal favorite because it takes place at Christmas, at least the beginning of it. And Pink Flamingos is also the movie, famously, where Divine, one of the greatest cross-dressers in film history, a man named Glenn Milstead, eats poop that comes out of a poodle's butt, and it's all in one shot. And it's beautiful, and it's about the filthiest person, people alive. It basically is mocking the media, where Divine is the filthiest woman alive, and there's a couple, this married couple, that's very jealous of Divine. They want to be the filthiest people alive. So it's the rivalry between these two groups, and the creepiest stuff happens in it. I don't want to give it away for the people that haven't seen it, but there's... I saw this movie when I was 16 years old at a repertory theater, and I remember being devastated, and I wrote an essay about it that just talking about how John Waters changed my life. When I saw that movie, I was scared that people had ideas to even make movies like that. Because mostly what I'd seen, and I began working at a video store at that time, which gave me access to a lot of cool stuff. I lied about my age when I was in high school and said I was 18 so I could work at this video store because they carried porn. So I wanted to be able to work there and get free DVDs, or free VHS tapes. I'm freaking old, people. I'm old. So, but Pink Flamingos really did alter my perspective just to show what you could do. It's also a movie that, you know, if you read up about what John Waters struggled with, he was constantly in battles over censorship where his movies could not be seen. John Waters is also a personal hero of mine. If you've ever read any of his books or collections of essays, he's brilliant when speaking about the media and mocking it. And I think we need someone like John Waters more than anything today. So Pink Flamingos, if you have not seen it, it's an incredibly radical film made in the 70s. And it might make you barf in your mouth. Look, you will gag when you see a poodle take a poop and a man pick it up. Divine gags as she's doing that. There's also a scene where a guy sort of does this performance with his butthole where he's sort of opening and closing the iris of his butthole in sort of like a dance. And after a while, it's kind of hypnotic and captivating. For everyone who's seen it, you've seen the opening and closing iris of the butthole in Pink Flamingos. Raise your hand if you've seen that. It's unforgettable, is what it is. So I highly recommend Pink Flamingos and just the entire oeuvre of John Waters. And
That was something, wasn't it? Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, it's Chris Gore. He's here. He took time out to be with us.
Welcome to the show. I am that Chris Gore. This is Podcrash, the show where you get to hear a different podcast each week where I appear as a guest.
Chris, this isn't Podcrash. You haven't done any Podcrashes in like forever. This is Film Threat.
Film Threat.
Yes, Chris, welcome to the show.
My promise to you is that I will reveal something shocking and personal about myself. I actually considered getting an Ewok tattoo on my upper thigh.
Okay, that's weird.
If that gives you any indication of how sick I am.
Yeah. Moving on, we have some fan questions we can go through. Are you up for that?
Hello, listeners. This is Chris Gore.
Okay, first question from Brian Wayne. Brian wants to know what our favorite Star Wars movies are. Mine is definitely The Empire Strikes Back. I really like the whole escalation of...
Episode 1.
Episode 1, really?
Episode 1. I love the prequels.
Okay, thank you for your question, Brian. Next question is from Amanda May. Amanda asks... What's the best part about working with Anthony?
I gotta say, like, as a producer, the thing I like most about you, and I'm being dead serious, is that you'll work for free.
Sadly, that's the nicest thing he's said about me all year. Next question comes from Edward Norgren. He writes, do you guys have any nicknames? If so, what are they? Well, Eddie, some of my friends call me AB because those are my initials. Ant-Man is another popular one people use. What about you, Chris?
Harry Coinslot.
Pardon me?
HarryCoinslot.com.
I don't want to know anything about the story behind your nickname. Tristan Hall wants to know, what's been your favorite movie of the year so far and why? Well, Tristan, I think Baby Driver is my favorite so far, even though I technically...
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast? The one with Emma Watson? That movie sucked.
Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, can you tell us why?
Disney butts.
If you say so.
If that gives you any indication of how sick I am.
Indeed. Okay, last question from Justin Trout. Justin asks, what's the most overrated movie of all time?
2001 A Space Odyssey.
Really? Wow. I'm not the biggest fan of that movie, but I wouldn't go as far as saying it's overrated.
Trust me. I actually considered getting an Ewok tattoo on my upper thigh.
Yeah, you said that already. Okay. Before we wrap this up, is there anything you want to add?
I only have one kidney.
Are you okay, Chris? Something just seems really off about you.
I'm going to have to stop every once in a while and do that.
Okay, that does it for this week's episode of the Film Threat Podcast. Follow me on Twitter at ThisGameCheats and follow Chris Gore on everything with that Chris Gore. One more time, if you're at Dragon Con this year, go see some panels with Chris Gore and tell them how disappointed you are that I'm not there. Thanks for listening, and let's get out of here.
Oh, my jeans.